the white community. I don't enjoy going down the street and here as I pass that road, that son of a bitch, you know. I don't enjoy that. But I believe that trying to be free, if that's a part of the process, then if there's to be trouble in my day, let it happen. So that after this is through, then maybe things will be better.
I asked you before, but the tape wasn't on, how your wife has stood up under this. Will you answer it again for me on the tape?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes.
Well, Mrs. Henry has stood this turmoil and difficulty remarkably well. And frankly, without her encouragement and support and understanding, it would be impossible for me to carry on. Because I'm away from home really too much, more than any married man likes to be away from home. The telephone calls come almost on the hour every day about some kind of violence, vulgarities and obscenities, which no man would really want his wife to have to undergo and put up with. But the fact that she's able to ask questions like, certainly you must be a Christian and you wouldn't do that. When Rebecca, our daughter, answers the phone and the man says, yeah, just shut your daddy, and she'd look at the phone and say, oh, fella, you kidding. These kinds of expressions on the part of my family are really sustaining to me, and I'm grateful for it, and I don't know whether I would be able to continue in this activity were it not for the fact that I have the complete support, understanding, and love of my family.
You have friends who come in to keep watch on the house at night, don't you?
Yes, we started this after Medgar was killed.
Yes.
And there has been this encouragement from all over the nation that we do take some precautions. And because the psychological well-being and psychological satisfaction of my family is important to me in trying to continue in the field of civil rights, we have permitted our friends to come in every night, and there's someone in the house or around the house every night since the death of Medgar.
Are they armed?
They're armed, yes, sir.
But since that time, there's been no further trouble with at your house?
No, and I suppose to some degree it's due to the fact that after Medgar was killed, I went to the chief of police and revealed to him the source of information that I had about the threats that have been made against my life.
Yes.
And, of course, he told me that he'd heard several threats, too. And that he asked me if I wouldn't let him take out an insurance policy on me. You see, he and I have been involved in a libel difficulty. One time I was arrested on a morals charge.
Here in Clarksdale?
No, in an adjoining county.
Yes.
Which the chief of police of my city and the county prosecuting attorney of my county were the only interrogators. And I felt that they had a part in concocting this fabrication. And I told them so. And they reacted by filing a libel suit against me. And the reason that Pearson, that Collins, chief of police, was asking for this life insurance policy was in the event that he won the suit, he wanted to be able to collect his money. And, of course, I parried it as if I thought he was kidding. And then next couple of days, he sent an insurance agent over to the store to try to persuade me to let him take out this policy. And if I had submitted to it, I knew that I'd probably been dead the next day, because here there would have been no reason for somebody not bumping me off with the chief of police. Now ready to collect whatever policy he had been able to write.
That's asking for it.
Oh, yes. So I discussed with him the hiring of a guard. I asked him about the city police department supplying us with protection. And he told me that he didn't have the men to spare and he couldn't do it. So we hired a guard. And the next couple of nights he came down to the house and arrested my guard and took my gun. And
the chief of police, the Clarksdale.
Of Clarksdale, yes. But that only set off a furor in the community, and many people donated us now more guns than we've ever had before. And of course, there have been no more confiscation of the weapons that we use. But every person that serves as guard at the house now is armed, and he can come and take the gun whenever he gets ready. There'll be plenty more that are made available to us.
There's no legal basis for seizing these weapons?
Well, he used the question of an unauthorized weapon. Now, I understand that from our lawyers that the state does provide that a weapon in your possession must be registered with the authorities. Of course, hardly anybody complies with that.
Does that apply to shotguns and sporting rifles, too?
Well, it does not differentiate. It does not say. It just simply says that firearms must be registered. And the gun that he took was not so registered. Therefore, we did not become involved in litigations about it.
What hour of the night does the guard come on?
He comes on around 11 somewhere in that area, and he's here all night long. Sometimes it all depends on who's coming. Many of them come much earlier and spend the evening looking at TV. Some of them come before I get here in the evening and go to bed and take a nap.
Then get up when you come in.
And get up when I'm ready to go to bed.
This is a body of friends and who simply take on this duty then.
Yes, sir.
Is this fact generally known in the community and around the countryside?
Well, it's pretty well known in this community now, particularly since Mr. Collins came out and arrested one of them one day.
Yes,
That got the word around.
That was a hired guard, you said, the first. Is that right?
Well, wasn't hired. He was volunteer.
Oh, volunteer, too. Mm-hmm. I thought you said the first guard was hired. I hear varying interpretations of the voter registration matter. Some people say there's real apathy, real just fatalism. Some say there's a certain amount of fear. And the other interpretations. What is the, in your mind, the problem?
Well, the greatest cause of Negroes not registering, I think, can be analyzed by the Mississippi Civil Rights Committee's report of 2 years ago, when it gave as the greatest cause that Negroes don't go down to register is because of fear of failure of the examination that is to be taken.
That fear of reprisal.
That's the first cause. The second cause was fear of reprisals.
Yes.
But the greatest cause was they were afraid that they couldn't pass it. Mm-hmm. And the other causes were direct intimidation and the refusal of the clerks to permit them to take the test. If the failure and the fear of failure of this examination is the greatest deterrent to Negroes or any people trying to register, it ought to be removed, whether the fear is real or imaginary. There should be no existence of fear to that extent in this country that remains without something being done by the state authorities or by the federal government to ensure the people that this fear need not exist.
Changing the subject again, I have a quote here which I'll paraphrase without reading the whole thing to you, from a Negro sociologist, historian, Dr. Hancock. He says, in brief, the problem of color, the problem of race, is a social problem, and therefore is subject to the same considerations of adjustment and maladjustment that all problems of social change involve. In social change, he goes on to say, there is never an immediate solution and never an absolute solution.
I think that there are imperfections in democracy, and I doubt if we will ever gain true perfection in democracy, but it can be improved a hell of a lot from where it is now.
All right, I just agree with that. My question then, next thing, will be this. If this is a process that is never immediate, there's no immediate solution. It's always a question of adjustments in time, whether long time or short time, but in time. Mm-hmm. Therefore, put against that the notion of freedom now, which says out of time immediately on the single stroke. Absolute solution now. It seems to say that. Mm-hmm. What does it really say? How do you interpret it?
Well, I interpret it this way. The freedoms that Negroes have been seeking go back to the year of 1865, 1863. And we have been patient. We have try to take into consideration that this will not be an overnight accomplishment. But we think that after 100 years of trying, it's time for freedom now. We don't think that this is any abrupt request.
Well, now, assuming that it is overdue, assuming that it is time, the time has come and passed due.
Yes.
The social process still remains, so it will not, suppose every legal bar will remove tomorrow morning, automatically.
Mm-hmm.
The big civil rights bill will pass with teeth, all the legal restrictions removed. The process will not be complete.
No.
What becomes of freedom now in this situation?
Well, you see, the law will not make you love me, but it'll stop you from lynching me.
Yeah.
And that's what we've got to be concerned with about the law. The law itself is one of the greatest force in social change that we could possibly have. And I think that my white brother owes me a deep debt of gratitude when I permit him to give me my rights piecemeal. Hell, they're mine now. He's lucky that I don't grab them all right now. When I work for you for $10 a week, sad to come, I want my $10. Don't come talking about I got $2.98 later. And I think that's what the struggle and the cry for freedom now is all about. We have been in labor nearly 400 years, and we want our payday. That's it.
Now, let me say something to you that someone said to me the other day, that so long as there's substantial movement toward freedom, that now is in the concept of freedom as due. The process is in the implementation of this idea, getting it out in time, but in a time that is has no date on it, but is actually where the progress is positive and continuous and accelerating.
I can buy that. We're going to continue to apply whatever pressures we know how to apply as long as there is the need to continue to apply them.
But now
the NAACP and other civil rights organizations would like to have gone out of business yesterday. But we will be in business as long as it takes and as long as it's necessary. We aren't going to come to the point where we're going to become violent, we're going to try to overthrow the government, we're going to try to gain the freedoms that we know are ours, and thrust the country, in the image of the country, in the eyes of the world, into a state of degradation from which perhaps it would never, you know, come from. But when it comes to the question of slow down, you're going too fast.
7, 8, 9, 10, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Let's try this and not this. The day will never come again when there will be any quietus put on the freedom movement.
In other words, the freedom now means now, literally, as constant and unremitting effort.
Right, right.
And no naive belief that a stroke of a pen or a stroke of a law brings a mystic change tomorrow morning.
That's true.
But in terms of the continuing and accelerating effort.
Yes, sir.